Hi, we're Angie and Annalie, and this is Brain Basement, a podcast where two friends who used to do yoga together in a basement now chat about chaos and wellness. As moms, we understand chaos. As expats, we get what that chaos looks like when you take it overseas.
From Manila to San Jose, we share stories of living abroad and explore topics around mental and emotional well-being. This podcast is for expat moms who want to find wellness amidst the chaos of everyday life.
We get what that chaos looks like when you... It said looks like.
Okay. What do you do? Welcome to Brain Basement. We're so glad you're here.
Brain Basement is back. Angie and Annalie are here. It has been some time since we have sat down together to record an episode. So thanks for being here. If you're here to join us, it's nice to be back. Feel like we're getting back on track. So to start off, before we talk about making decisions for family versus career in those big life choice, looking at the next move that's available to us in our foreign service life, when we have to debate about what will be best for career-wise versus what would work for our family. Before we get into all of that, let's take three deep breaths together. So checking in with your body and allowing some tension to release from your limbs, from your hands and your feet, relaxing your shoulders and checking in with your breath. Seeing if you can just feel how your breath is moving, listening to the space inside your lungs. And just notice where you're at today. Feeling the sensation of your breath moving through your body at this moment. Feeling each inhale filling you up and each exhale releasing and softening. And allowing yourself just this moment to connect with this breath, to be present in your body. Maybe listening to what thoughts come to mind. I'm just feeling that sensation of the waves moving through you, allowing a little relaxation to wash through, and just breathing that in to carry that relaxation with you as you come back to this moment and discussion, opening your eyes if your eyes are closed, checking in with your heart and your thoughts as we're here to talk today as friends. Hi, Annalie.
Hi, Angie. Thank you for that. I was thinking while you were talking, it's been a long time since I've taken three deep breaths and just checked in with myself, and it felt really good. So thank you.
I've been once in a while, I remember to breathe in these weeks of chaos and crisis and emotions. I occasionally remember to breathe and notice my breath. I usually do when I'm going to sleep. I kind of am able to check in, but some days I forget entirely. Some weeks I forget.
Yeah. And it's amazing how when I don't do it, my body, I can tell. Like, I've been waking up the last few days just feeling like 10 years older than I am or 20 years older than I am, like just creaky. I don't think my body's supposed to feel like this. And Yeah, I've been trying to do some deep breathing the last few days, but as of a month ago, yeah, when all hell broke loose, it was like being sucked into this, like, yeah,
news, yeah,
like reading the news 24/7, and yeah, I can feel it now, you know?
I do too. And I sometimes, like, stillness is scary. I go back to that part of, like, if I'm still or quiet or check in with my thoughts, that's going to be hard, because I know my thoughts are with Ukraine and my thoughts are of war and scary things. And so it's like, I want to avoid that. So then that means I have to avoid being still or noticing what I'm thinking or trying to breathe deeply, because it feels like that's going to bring up those heavy emotions.
Totally. I know, you know, my spouse was over in Poland for a few weeks helping out with the situation in Ukraine and the war. And I kept saying, you should write down at night, you know, what happens to you during the day, or like your thoughts or what's going on, because this is history and, you know, it needs to be documented. And he didn't in the end, and fine. But I was thinking about it in relation to what you just said, like whenever I'm under a lot of stress or there's chaos or crisis, that's like the last thing I want to do is write about it. And I've even thought of some of our moves over the years, like it would be valuable to have a recording of those moves and what I was thinking and what I was feeling, because every time I move, I kind of want to access that part of me again and be like, how did you do it? You know, 10 years ago when you made that first move, or 8 years ago. But I don't have a record of that. But it also makes sense, because like what you said, it requires some bravery to slow down and look at what's hard at that moment. And writing it down feels like you're making it even more real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's not true. It's more real. I mean, it couldn't be more real, right? Like, we're not going to create more trauma by writing it down. I'm not going to create trauma for myself by sitting down and breathing. Like, if I start bawling and weeping and I'm overcome with emotion because I sit down to breathe, that probably means I needed to process those feelings, that I'm walking around each day holding on to that, like, little volcano inside me of needing to weep and cry and feel distress and feel grief and all of the things. And it's just a false idea that if I allow myself to feel that, it's going to feel terrible. I mean, it will feel terrible, but it's feeling terrible every day anyway.
Exactly. I know, it's such a good point. And I think we've talked about this a few times on here, that what is so scary about that situation? Like, what is preventing us from sitting down and slowing down to really take a closer look at what's happening? Is it that some of these harder emotions really do freak us out? Like, I don't want to acknowledge that I'm feeling rage or horror over what's happening. But as we've talked about, you know, feelings don't go anywhere. They don't, you know, they're not attacking us like a monster in the closet. They're just doing their thing inside of us. And as we've said so many times, like you said, they're going to be in there one way or the other, and we can look at them and let them move and be fluid and process, or they're going to find their way to settle in somewhere.
Yeah. It's like, when I think about it, I think maybe I have a secret belief, and I don't know if this is culturally, that I've, like, being raised and growing up in the United States, that you have this idea that you have power over yourself, or that we're strong and independent enough that I can override it. It's like, maybe I really can just overpower that grief and sadness. And if I ignore it or something, like, it will go away. I can override it. I can just determine myself to be strong and productive through all of these emotions. And I don't, it's like, I didn't grow up ever thinking these emotions are okay, or these emotions are really powerful and strong, so acknowledge them. It's from that, like, childhood idea of don't cry or don't think about it and don't, you know, show that much emotion and just go through and be productive, that maybe even with all of our talks and all of the research and every book that you and I read, and what I really do believe that these emotions are powerful, there's still a piece of me that says, in this moment, I have to be strong and overpower this and overcome it and not let myself fall into tears.
Yeah. Well, it's in our blood, right? Like, if that's what you've been taught and the culture you grew up in, then it's just like a part of us. And to uproot that or deconstruct it is a lot of work and a lot of practice over time, that rewiring our perception and beliefs around these and harder emotions. And I was writing something recently about difficult emotions, and, you know, there's so many practices around emotions and things we can do to allow them and process them. But I was thinking, one aspect of dealing with difficult emotions is just this tiny little piece of allowing them. Mm-hmm. And I was writing, like, specific practices that, you know, we can do to just simply allow. Like, we don't have to analyze, we don't have to fix them, we don't have to process them, we don't have to do anything, just open our hearts, minds, bodies to just get curious. And there's so much power in just that, in just allowing, like, just saying out loud, I feel so scared right now, and normalizing it. I was kind of taken up in this idea of, we can do that, you know, even if we don't know what comes after that, we can just allow. And I think part of my conditioning around emotions is that if it's quote unquote negative, you know, there's no negative or positive, but our culture says there's negative and bad emotions, that they need to be fixed. Something has to be done to uproot and cast away these bad emotions, because something about feeling that is wrong. And for me, that's been a huge aha moment, that some of these harder emotions teach me way more than, you know, some of the more comfortable ones. And I don't know where I was going with that, but.
Yes. Well, yeah, I think that's it, right? It's like, when I work with teenagers, and when I talk to teenagers about processing their emotions or allowing the emotions and asking them, like, what would be so bad if you felt this emotion, or how would it be to feel anxiety on a daily basis and accept that anxiety was there instead of resisting it? How would it be to, you know, live with this emotion and acknowledge it? And when you're writing it, we can think about it in this concept, and it's very easy to say, yes, we can accept that emotion. And then in that moment, when you're the person experiencing that emotion, when you're a teenager going through that, it's so hard. And when you're an adult, when you're a complete adult with your own children and you're writing about it, we can remove ourselves enough to see it. And then when we're in that moment, we just, I mean, I don't know anyone who does that all the time. Does Thich Nhat Hanh always experience an authentic emotion before he passed away? You know, does the Dalai Lama, like, does Mother Teresa never deny a feeling, a genuine feeling, a moment of being in that emotion? I don't know.
I mean, I can't think of anyone. And honestly, you know, if you're a busy person and you have a lot to do, sometimes I might recognize that I feel off or there's, you know, some heavier emotions inside, but I don't always have the time to sit down and even allow it to acknowledge it. And so, I mean, just practically speaking, sometimes you just don't have the time.
Yeah, exactly. Right. When you're like driving a car, you can't, and like some emotion washes over you, you don't even have the option to just be present with that emotion because you have to get yourself to your destination safely and be able to see the road, not through blurry tears. So
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that's just a life, a way, you know, that just happens in human life, even without any cultural influences, that you get through the moment of what you're doing and you set the emotion back to process later.
Yeah. And I've had to do that many times where I thought, there is something seriously going on. I can't deal with it now. Put it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't get to it for a few weeks.
Yeah.
But
I mean, we can leave things on the shelf for a year, right?
You're like,
I am not going to look at that.
I'm sure I have a lot on the shelf. I don't even know that I put up there.
That's what we're going back to, the basement. All those things that we boxed up and put away, or maybe we're all, or in the attic, we're all on the opposite floor. I don't even want to know what is in there.
Yeah, I think I have things stored on all floors.
Today is my daughter's 21st birthday.
Aww.
My oldest, and she's 21, and I spoke to her this morning and I said, I just haven't really pictured of my four children, I haven't pictured adult life yet, right? I was in this period of they were young and little kids, and I didn't picture what teenagerhood would look like. And then I wrapped my mind around teenagerhood, and then I was still thinking of them as college kids, you know, kind of teenager in that young adult phase. And now it's just hit me that I have to picture adult living and accept them in this new phase. And it's kind of, when I look back on all of the things that I've put on the shelf, or the discussions that I've had, or the things that I've said that I want, that I regret, and that I don't ever want to look at again, and all the emotions I want to push away. And then I think there are also the, you know, it's recognizing that my children will be adults one day and live their own wholly independent life from me, and thinking of their own emotion. It's, I don't know how I'm drawing these two parallels, but just as you're saying that, I thought, thinking of the house that I have built and the emotion that I've put in boxes on different levels and layers, and what I have uncovered and have learned and have grown, and that, you know, the youth of today is also creating that, but maybe in a more open-minded space. I do think, like, mm-hmm. mental health, emotions, we're all recognizing that that is part of who we are, how we interact with people, what affects our daily life. It's not just do the right things, check the boxes, buy the house, make the payments, you know, work at a desk for 45 years, retire, do the, you know, take the vacations. We recognize now that there's more of this. So maybe young people will be more in touch with processing their emotions.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I saw some sheets, some bed linens being sold the other day online that had little emotion faces all over them, with them labeled like sad, mad, jealous, angry, happy, joy. Even that, I didn't have those sheets.
Yeah, and then as you're going to sleep, when you're tucking your kid into bed, you can kind of say, point to these, the things you felt today.
Yeah, I mean, it's out, right? Like, my kids are learning about emotions in school, and I find little crumpled pieces of paper in the bottom of their backpacks that all have to do with emotional literacy, and choose the lamb, you know, out of six different lambs that are doing, making different faces, which one do you resonate with right now? And I didn't have that when I was growing up. So I agree. I want to believe that maybe they have a bit of an advantage in this emotional literacy department.
Yeah. It's kind of fun to consider.
Yeah. Even just acknowledging that it's a thing and that they hear it every once in a while is positive. Whether or not they're like doing the work, quote unquote, who knows, but yeah, but they're building their own emotional houses, right? Your daughter's already got hers, and
we're modeling for them too. And I think about like the emotions that I think I've seen or I saw my parents express. I saw my parents express much less emotion than I expressed to my kids. So to be determined whether this is helpful for them or not, but certainly they are. I think I did grow up with a concept of growing as an adult, then everything's under control. I have everything figured out. You know, you go through figuring it out when you're 17, 18, 19, and then it's all figured out and things work and you're functional and productive and not emotional. As an adult, I just had that in my mind, and my kids certainly are aware that emotions still come up and impact my day as an adult. So,
I mean, that sounds so healthy. And I've been thinking lately, I don't have much of a filter either with my children. My oldest is 11, and I started thinking the other day, should I be withholding some of these louder, bombastic emotions that I just kind of let out? But then that just feels weird to suppress that part of me. But like you said, to be determined whether it's helpful or not.
Ooh, we'll see.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, my 21-year-old is kind of doing pretty great. So that's fun too. It does feel like I'm on the edge of being able to see the adults that they grew into, are growing into now. Not that it would be credit to me, much more credit to them for what they decided to learn from my mistakes. And I tell them all the time, I think I probably make, you know, 15 mistakes a day, or I don't say the right thing, or I might be strict when you need more compassion, or I might be showing too much compassion when you need a more strict, you know, parenting happening here. I'm sure I'm making mistakes all the time, but as long as you know that I love you and I am trying to support you, my effort and my focus is to do what's best for you. So whether I do it right or wrong, hopefully is less important than making sure that I'm making the effort and my focus is in the right place.
Yeah. That's like the sweetest. I hope your daughter listens to this part of the episode, because that was like, here's your birthday gift from your mom. I mean, I think that's like so sweet. And what greater gift can we give our kids than a very human, flawed parent that makes mistakes, and sometimes we apologize, and maybe sometimes we don't, but there's not this false perception that you have to be someone else once you turn 21 or once you grow into adulthood. And what they're seeing every day is, it's attainable, you know, like they're going to make mistakes too. What a gift to be able to know that going into adulthood, that you don't have to be perfect all of a sudden, or you don't have to be this or that. And we struggle all along the way.
That's right. That's so true. Also hilarious that you could perceive that any child of mine would ever listen to a podcast that I like. I want to hear more of what my mom has to say.
I'm going to edit that one segment out and just text it to her. Just make time for a minute 30 in your day. Thinking though, my husband, like his best memory of his dad from his young childhood, my husband's young childhood, is the times that his dad apologized to him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You know, made mistakes, whatever. And of course he remembers those too, but one of his biggest takeaways from him, he always says, is my dad said he was sorry. And that's cool.
That is amazing.
Right? Like, yes. Yeah. And great that I hope that translates to our kids and is passed on through us. I don't know.
Yeah. Like now we have actual scientific research, Annalie. That's a case study. It's not to be determined. That is impactful and helpful, right? Making mistake, not being the perfect parent, and being able to look at yourself and be honest and say, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's
a big deal.
Yeah.
Good. Proven scientific, it's a scientific method in action.
Yeah. We just declared it evidence-based here on the podcast.
That was a longitudinal study over 30 years.
Yeah. Involving two people. a sample size of two.
We said we were going to talk about choosing family over career, and should we even just mention that in our last 5 minutes? Should we discuss that? Because it goes along with what we've been saying, right? We look at our list of what post is next, or we're at post and we're considering, you know, how it's working for our family. And I think the choice of looking at what is best for the career of the employee and then what is best for family, it feels like two different things that I look at when we're considering posts. And I would say that we have 100% chosen family posts that work for us over career, but it's still such a hard choice.
It really is. And I'm like you, we've chosen family, we've kind of had to remind ourselves when bidding cycle comes up and everything's on the table, what are our priorities? Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to say that it could change at some point, you know, like maybe an unaccompanied tour is the right thing for our family. And
right.
You know, prioritizes maybe some aspects of family life, but also prioritizes the career. But it's really challenging. And sometimes we've been in a situation where it's not that we made the wrong decision, but it ended up just not turning out like we thought it would, even when we prioritized family. Mm-hmm. But I look back and I am, at least for our family, it's been valuable to prioritize our family, definitely at the ages that my kids are at and just our unique situation. But,
And I guess it's not predictable. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I suppose either way, we don't know. Like you said, sometimes it doesn't work out as what we thought it would be. For me, most posts have been not as expected. It's always something different. Maybe it's better. Maybe it's not as great as I expected, but there's an adjustment once we get there. And that could be the same for, you could choose a post based on career that could turn out to be fantastic for your family and never earn you the promotion or the, you know, the avenue that you thought that was going to make available to your career. So it's all pretty unpredictable. We're just basing it on our own ideas or feelings of, I think this school or this community would be better for our family, even though we don't know that to be true.
Yeah. Yeah. And the conversations around that decision are so hard because, you know, sometimes you can make a case for career enhancing posts versus, you know, and you can make a case for maybe family enhancing.
Yes. And it overlaps, right? Of course, because you can't have, like, if it enhances your career and then you're more fulfilled and that's providing opportunities moving forward, that's creating a better, you know, better outcome for your family. So there is some, there's merit in sacrifice too. If you see an initial, like, well, this part will be harder for us, but once you get over that hump, then all of these things will be available to us. I mean, yeah, there's just no way to puzzle it out, but that is a conversation we have frequently. And who knows what the right answer is. I guess we just make it work. Whatever, if we're there for career, if we're there for family, it's like figuring out on a day-to-day basis how to make it work for now, how to shift into the next thing if it's not working out, if it's not what you expected. And here we are. We've evacuated Kyiv. We're just looking at all the possibilities. Should we, you know, focus on this and hold out and see what will happen over the next few years? Should we try to shift gears and take a different position? It's a conversation you have to look at all the time.
Yeah, it is ever present. And when that bidding cycle comes up or the time, decision-making time, I feel like I've been trained over the last 10, 15 years that something in me gets really stressed because it's so familiar with what that means. Mm-hmm. A lot of researching, a lot of studying, a lot of talking with spouse and laying out consequences for children and how old are they going to be when we move from here and what grade will they be in and extracurriculars. And so it's a big deal, but yeah. So with that, on that note, good luck, Angie.
I just feel like this is our brain basement reunion and we're right back to where emotional and no advice and who knows, and we have no idea what we're doing. So we're all back on track with emotions everywhere and no idea what to do to make it better.
Yeah, we haven't skipped a beat. We're here to validate everything.
That's us. Annalie, I'm so glad we got to talk, and to our 8 listeners out there, thanks for listening and joining us.
Yeah, we've missed you. We've missed each other. It's good to be back.
Yeah. All right. See you soon.